This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 229 for Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight for the first time, Mr. J.F. Dubow. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me, Joel.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you on. You were recommended by our mutual friend, Hammond Chamberlain. I know Phil Rood is a fan of yours as well. And also Tom Merritt. I've kind of heard you in the ether in my podcast realms. And that's not a surprise because you're a podcaster as well.
Well, I dabble mostly.
Hey, well, that's how it starts, right? You put the big toe in, and then before you know it, you've got three shows and no free time.
Wait, that's exactly where I'm at. Oh no.
Oh no.
I am a podcaster.
Yeah. Welcome to the fold. So I have to confess, I only realized the podcasting thing like very shortly before the interview tonight, or not interview, but like the guest spot tonight. What shows do you do?
There are three, I would say niche show. I do a show about the Blizzard game Overwatch with my friend Amy Frost.
Oh, cool.
It's not a news show. One of our biggest philosophies regarding podcasting is that there's no way we can do a show that will. And anyone that's enough of a fan of the game to listen to a podcast will have found any news that we can bring on blogs way faster than we can actually do a podcast about it.
Sure.
So it's very much just the two of us getting together, speculating, trading rumors, and just geeking about the game and the storyline that goes around it.
Cool. I unfortunately don't have access to Overwatch, but I listen to podcasts about it because I find it very interesting. And because of the story that they've built around this, you know, the first-person shooter, which is not usually something that you get.
Exactly. That's what kind of hooked us from. Like we had our 100th episode, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations!
So we've been at it since before the beta, just because. I mean, we would probably do a podcast if neither of us would play the game, just because we follow the storyline and the lore so closely.
Right on. Do you play it a lot?
Not as much as I would like, but I do. I play it significantly. I would say an average of maybe an hour a day.
Wow. Well, that's a significant commitment, I would say. That's like me and my new Minecraft hobby. I hesitate to call it downtime. It's no longer downtime. I have goals now. when it comes to that game. But like, you know, instead of watching TV mindlessly for an hour or two, I'll play Minecraft for an hour or two. So whatever. My only complaint and the only thing I have to watch is that it's more time in front of the computer, which I already spend too much time doing. So it's not, I'm not playing Minecraft on an Xbox where it's like a, you know, a lean back couch experience. Although I can see how that would be appealing with like a really nice big TV. Yeah. So what are you like? Are you a big gamer? Do you have a pretty decent rig for Overwatch?
No, I play on my laptop. I have a Mac, so I have to boot camp it, and I have a partition that's exactly, not exactly, I gave myself a bit of leeway, but it's the operating system, Discord, and an Overwatch on that machine.
Nice. So it's a dedicated Overwatch laptop. Yeah, I have a friend's Windows machine here for Warcraft, just because my machine is now super old and doesn't really run it very well. But I haven't played Warcraft in a long time. I stopped my sub probably before Christmas. There's a big patch just the other day for World of Warcraft 2, so there's a lot of people going back. Actually, a birthday shout out, Mike O'Day. His birthday was on Monday, and I was out for a beer with him last night. Actually, we had dinner. And he was talking about resubscribing to WoW now that he's done some exams and some things with his secondary degree, and he's uh, I don't know if he was talking about Overwatch so much, but he was definitely talking about getting back into World of Warcraft with the new Sargeras patch. 7 point something? I don't remember the exact number.
Point two?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think there's been one already, but I know it's crazy cool. I really admire all of the narrative content that Blizzard puts into everything that they do. You know, whether it's Warcraft, Overwatch. I love the Overwatch shorts.
The shorts and the comics, it's one of the nice things is that all of these things kind of connect loosely together. And if you do play the game inside the game, the maps kind of evolve with tiny little details and Easter eggs. So every time they put out a bit of content, let's say it's a comic book or it's a one of the animated shorts, you have to go in game and see if they've modified anything in the map, even if it's a tiny detail, a poster or a piece of newspaper that they've added an article to. It's half the fun is just dabbling around with what's happening with the lore.
Yeah, and I haven't read the Overwatch comics, but they were on my radar because we had read some of the World of Warcraft comics that they had released before the launch of Legion for Comics Coast to Coast. And it was twofold. It was cool, Warcraft comics, but it was also a neat app where it was like not animated, but it was a curated experience kind of going through the comic story. And probably one of the best that I've ever had. And unfortunately, I'm blanking on the name of the app. I think I have it on my iPad, but it's out of reach right now. I'd be curious to see like how, like if I was really into Overwatch, like I'd be curious to see if that would also bring me into reading the comics and paying a little bit more attention, stuff like that. Like, I think it would be an excellent television series, whether maybe not native TV, but like, you know, YouTube video releases or Netflix or something.
Well, right now they do have those animated shorts that kind of fulfill that role, but they're so infrequent that and they're not necessarily directly connected. I mean, they're all connected to the same universe, but it's not serialized. But I would love to see them, especially with the quality of animation that they're doing, if they could do something like a Netflix series of Overwatch would just be overwhelmingly cool. Just because of how rich the background is.
Yeah, I mean, they'd probably have to dumb down the rendering and the designs a little bit, you know, from these high quality like Blizzard vignettes to something a little bit more cartoony. But I'd be okay with that. Like, I'd be even okay with like something super stylized, like Clone Wars or the new Rebels one, where things are just a little bit more angular and more simple, which just allows you to focus on the story and worry less about like, you know, hair flowing in the wind and stuff like that, which
pull back a bit on the glamour shots and just focus on the narrative.
Yeah, I mean, things that are important to an Overwatch show visually, things glowing and things exploding are easy in CG. Like it's like wet hair, you know, and like dynamics and stuff like that takes like crazy render time and whatever, and that's why you don't see it that much in shows. And I don't think you'd need it. Like, I think the focus on story, from even what I've seen, and this is the impression that Overwatch has left on me, is that I haven't played a second of the game. I've only just seen people play it, and I can't watch it on Twitch. Like, I find it horrible to like, just it's very disorienting to watch on Twitch. It's too fast. So I've seen glimpses of people playing it, but I've really enjoyed, you know, the secondary content like podcasts and the vignettes and stuff like that. So, but Overwatch is not the only thing that you do creatively. You're a designer, you're an author, and you paint miniatures. And I want to go in a little bit deeper on the miniatures later, because I'm very green to the whole thing. But one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on is because we were chatting off mic, and you had mentioned that you have a new book coming out.
Yeah, I do. On June 15th, my second book is going to be published by Inkshares, the same publisher that published my first book, but also published Pilot X by Tom Merritt.
Nice.
As well as Abomination by Gary Whitta, the screenwriter of Rogue One. Well, one of the screenwriters for Rogue One. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, congratulations. I mean, you're talking about podcasting and hitting milestones. And I would say, you know, publishing a book and then publishing a second book, that's an excellent milestone to hit, because there's a lot of people out there that they just do the one.
Yeah, no, it's I think you'll share. I mean, you're also a cartoonist and illustrator. You're a podcaster. It's hard in this day and age to be a creative individual and just do one thing. It's like going to the buffet and just having chicken wings. No, if you're a creative individual, it's very difficult, unless you're extremely focused. It's difficult not to do one or two things just to be able to, I don't know, stretch the muscles, be more rounded, and really use all of your creative muscle. I'm using the word muscle too much, but it's just a good way of keeping variety and having various art forms feed onto each other.
Oh, absolutely. And I think too that if you look at my hobbies, things that I don't get paid for are, usually they're not illustration. I don't generally draw a whole lot for myself anymore, which is kind of sad, just because I, you know, it tends to be so much of my income and my job, which is now switched, because now with Forge Publishing, I'm really more of a publisher and a designer and making, you know, stuff happen on big joint projects. So I'm no longer just drawing for other people, which means that my itch to draw on my own time is now a lot higher, which is nice. It's been a long time since I've kind of had that. Because a lot of times, and you might find this with writing or with, you know, designing, you know, like at the end of the day, you're just like, I don't want to do any of that for me. Like, I already do enough of it for other people. It's the job. So then you say, all right, well, I need a hobby. I need things that are not related to what I do for my job. But ultimately, the hobbies end up being creative, right?
No, exactly. It's just a different type of creativity. Just to, I don't know, it's as if you were a professional athlete that, you know, you did marathon. Well, when you get home, you go play some football. I don't know. You're just still doing something that is related to what you love, just slightly different, so it doesn't feel like you're doing the same thing all the time.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I don't do any writing, although I've always been tempted. For me right now, I mean, it's Lego and Minecraft. I mean, Lego is really cool because I don't even have to think. I don't have to necessarily come up with anything. I haven't done any custom builds. I'm just following instructions. So it's awesome. There is nothing, and then there is something at the end, and someone else tells me how to do it. So that part is very relaxing. But for you, you know, writing and then, you know, painting miniatures and stuff like that, like that's all, it's still creative stuff. You know, it's still a way to scratch that itch, but then not have it be necessarily something that you're depending on for income.
Unfortunately.
Well, wow.
No, because here's the thing is that of all the hobbies I've done, I've done a lot of illustration, painting. I've done the miniature hobby for nigh on to 2 decades.
Wow.
I've only started writing seriously maybe 7 years ago, and there's definitely something different about writing that I could do it full time and just never get sick of it. That's if you fantastic. Could if you were to take it away all my other hobbies, I would still be happy with just writing, which I think I'm really lucky to have that that approach, to have mm-hmm. found that a passion that's all consuming like that. So it's if I could, when you say like I'm not making a living off it, I would love to be able to make a living off of writing, not because of any of like the tropes of success or the celebrity or whatever, just because if I were writing for a living, I'd be able to write so much more.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, I mean, you're 2 books in. That's one heck of a start.
Yeah, and working on a third, fourth, and fifth right now.
Wow. So. Okay. So, all right. Well, before we really kind of, so teaser is done. Before we talk about the second book, A God in the Shed is the title of your first book, correct?
No, that's my second book. This one that's coming out in June.
Oh, that's the one that's coming out in June. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So, okay. I got confused. Screw it. Tell us about A God in the Shed.
A God in the Shed is a horror novel about a small town in, I said in Quebec, you know, write what you know, I'm comfortable here, set in the Eastern Township of Quebec. And it's a small town, small village, roughly maybe, what, 800 people there. And it has a fairly storied past. And this all comes together when the local serial killer is apprehended, and whereas that should be the end of the horror story for that village, it actually sets in motion events that have been sort of kept bottled up for almost two decades. The capture of the serial killer releases this evil entity, and also starts unearthing the village's past. And then what happens from there on, main character, a girl called Venus McKenzie, inadvertently traps this evil entity, this dark god, in her backyard shed. And this kind of unexpected event makes everybody else who had plans for what would happen once that creature was let loose, it messes up their plans, and conflicts arise, hijinks ensues, and horror. Cool. I don't want to tell too much.
No,
obviously,
of course. I want to excite people about it, because the title alone had me kind of go, wait a minute. This definitely sounds like something that I would be interested in. And then when I read the description on your website, and I obviously read the date wrong in terms of, I thought this one was one that was already out. But like it really does sound like, is there a touch of humor to it, or is it all dark?
It's pretty dark.
Okay. I'm curious.
It's not one of those satirical horror novels. It's not. Right. I mean, there's a couple of, how to say, the funny things are usually tied to darker things. So okay. if you have a dark sense of humor, there's a couple of things that may give you a smirk. But otherwise, it's very pure horror.
Okay, interesting. Because like the fact that a god is trapped in a garden shed, it like that to me is pretty funny.
There's an absurdity to it, definitely.
Mm. Yeah. The title alone reminds me of some of the books I've read by Christopher Moore. Have you read any of his stuff?
No, but the name rings a bell. Yeah, I have a terrible memory. You okay. may name someone that I have read a book of, and I've just forgotten the names.
Dirty Job, The Gospel According to Biff.
Gospel According to Biff. Yes, that. Yeah. That's a web comic, right? Am I thinking about something completely different?
No, see, I feel like there is a webcomic about Biff, but not the same Biff.
This is my brain, how it doesn't work properly.
Yeah. Christopher Moore did a Dirty Job, and it was a satirical, dark kind of comedy about a beta male and his wife that are having a child together, and she dies in childbirth in like the first page and a half. And he's left with this infant baby. But in the process of his wife dying, he actually sees the Grim Reaper come and take her. And unfortunately for him, the Grim Reaper makes him a Reaper. So then he has to figure out how to do this thing and get these souls to where they need to go while raising a kid on his own.
Okay, I've had someone try to sell me on reading this book, and I may have it on my book, my Goodreads to read list.
Oh, probably, yeah. I highly recommend
that
it.
That sounds
very
familiar.
Yeah,
I have a lot of books on my list to read, and the past few months have been very difficult because I've had my publisher has been having me read other people's work.
Right.
So, and I want to be nice, and I want to be able to give feedback. So I've been reading a lot of unpublished work, but unfortunately, that's been pushing back my own reading.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where I have more books now than I will probably even read this year. And yet I keep buying more. now some of them are art books and they're a little bit easier to read than others. But like I had one, two, three art books arrive in the last month. And I've only just kind of like read the first couple pages of them. I haven't sat down and read them. Because I've been otherwise distracted. I've had the time. I've certainly had the time. I've played way too much Minecraft. Like I think part of it right now, and I'm curious now that I have an author on the show. I think one of the reasons why I don't read as much is because I don't have a really comfortable, well-lit spot in the apartment to read. I don't like reading in bed. When I go to bed, I tend to just go to sleep. So I tend to want to read like in the living room or something like that. And I don't seem to really have a nice spot to do it. Where do you normally read?
I tend to read in transit or during my lunch hour.
Hmm.
Very occasionally, I will just go to a coffee shop. Like, I do a lot of my writing at coffee shops because it pulls me away from all my toys. It makes coffee and snacks easily available without having to make them myself. And also, if I need inspiration for characters, I just need to look around and find things. But I also tend to do some of my reading in coffee shops. Like if I just want to not be bothered by things, just turn off my phone, go to a local place and just read there.
I read on park benches. I like going to the public gardens in Halifax and reading there. But it's something I practice only in the summertime because it's not open in the winter. So I've been looking for a good indoor solution. I should try going to the library. Imagine that. And reading there. Although the library can be a pretty busy spot. And I've done work there. I've certainly taken some admin work there, like when you have a mountain of email or if you've got like a lot of article reading and research to do for Kickstarters and stuff like that. Like I did a lot of book prep for daily paintings there, and I found that was really useful. So maybe I'll try reading there more. I've done it for 15 or 20 minutes when like you're early for an appointment and you're just like, well, I got 20 minutes to kill. I'll just grab something off the shelf at the library and just kind of bum around. But I haven't actually gone there for a solid, few hours of reading, and I should, because I've got a couple of new books. Actually, my sister gave me one of the new Christopher Moore books for Christmas, which I still haven't gotten to. But I did read Harry Potter over the holidays. So I wasn't not reading anything. But yeah.
I'm not going to admit publicly that I have not read Harry Potter yet.
Hey, neither have I. I read a book and three chapters of book two, and I just haven't returned to it.
I really want to read them. It's just, I have so much on my list.
Well, and there's so much, and there's such a huge, there's like 7 or 8 books or something like that. So I may eventually go to audiobook. I've had several animator friends of mine when I was working in TV years ago consumed it that way while they were working because they could draw and listen to a book at the same time. And it came highly recommended. Apparently the British guy that reads it is very, very good.
I've started doing the audiobook thing just a few days ago, actually. I started listening to Andrew Main's Angel Killer on audiobook. And I had never really considered. I listen to an ungodly amount of podcasts at work, exactly what you're describing, whenever I'm doing menial tasks. Mm-hmm. And I had never really considered listening to audiobooks. And then I got, I decided, might as well. I've got this free Audible credit from every podcast I listen to.
Yeah.
And I've been meaning to read. I purchased the ebook version of Andrew's book and never got around to actually reading it because I don't have time. So far, I'm enjoying the experience. I think I will definitely keep going and get consuming more books that way.
Yeah, when I was doing putting together my first Starcrossed book, I was reading the Game of Thrones books that way, and that's a lot of material, and it's very enjoyable to read with an audiobook. Definitely. I've even gone as far, I want to say I did it with Game of Thrones. I might have done it with something else, where I've had the audiobook playing and then I've had the book with me at the same time. Like I've been reading while someone's been almost like reading along. Seems a little bit odd, but I feel like there was one, summer, week where I was just having a really hard time focusing, or you're at the park and there's like a wedding going on or something. You're just like, this is really loud and distracting. So I kind of popped them both on at the same time. It was an interesting experience. I definitely feel like I retained a lot from both reading and having it read to me, but interesting. I need to get some more audiobooks because I'm looking to do some traveling this summer, and long plane rides are going to need more than just my regular podcasts.
Yeah. That's funny because plane rides and taking a bus or whatever, that's where I usually will read actual physical books.
Yeah. I'll have to see what I can bring. It's gonna be a couple of weeks, so I should. I'm gonna try travel as light as I can. But that's what e-readers are for, right?
No, exactly. I think most of my reading now I do it on my iPad. I have a very small apartment that is mostly filled already with books and with miniatures.
Right.
So I try not to get more books, but I'm on Simon and Schuster's Black Library advanced reader copy list, and they keep sending me book after book after book that I don't have time to read. Over the weekend I was at a miniatures event in Chicago, and I just brought a huge box of books and just gave them all away.
Oh wow. I've seen that happen in situations, you know, social situations where people are moving. They'll just bring a whole big box of books and they'll just put it down and say, like, here, take one. And I have a hard copy of one of Stephen King's novels that I've still not read just because it was free and it was hard copy. And it's like, hey, that looks like a really nice book. I think I'll grab that. Take that home. If nothing else, it'll keep the door open. You know,
which one?
The one about JFK. Then it's a number.
Oh, 13. Well, yeah, yeah, I know the one.
I can't remember the
Did
name.
Did they not make a TV series out of that?
I think they tried. I don't know. I've been so out of the loop on any new television show. I don't have extended cables, I don't have cable at all, so I haven't been keeping up on stuff like that. So I've tried to catch up on Man in a High Castle, and I'm a few episodes into that, but most of my stuff is just like the Netflix, Amazon, you know, kind of original stuff.
Yeah, but I'm super far behind on everything television related because
me too.
I have to watch Stranger Things. I haven't seen it yet, but I've been instructed to. By,
oh, you will like it. Yeah. Given what you've told me about your book, like, yeah.
I know it's got the only thing that's going to bother me a bit is if they slather on the nostalgia a bit too thick, because that, I think, is too easy of a narrative tool. But everything else about it just looks fantastic.
No, they certainly don't smack you in the face with it. It's more about how it looks. Makes it feel nostalgic, not that the nostalgia is part of the plot or story. It's not, it's certainly not part of the character development. Like, it just happens to be set in the 70s, like, you know, give or take. Like, it's not at all anything that is trying too hard, you know. Like, there's no product shots and, like, just, you know, stupid language, and they don't say over and over again what year it is, you know, that sort of thing. And what I like about it, it's similar in how Guardians of the Galaxy kind of brings back some cool old tunes, in that, like, there's this nonchalant, you know, car ride and there's a song playing on the radio. And it just happens to be, like, you know, a 70s song, and it really just makes it feel, you know, authentic. But they don't make a big deal about it. It's not like someone leans forward and goes, ooh, I love this song. You know, like, it's just kind of background noise,
and they,
you know,
pop up the volume and they start headbanging. It's basically the scene from Wayne's World as they're listening to to Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
just, hey, remember that song in that movie?
Yeah, exactly.
No, it sounds like such an amazing series, and also The Expanse, and you mentioned Man in High Castle. There's so many things that are either connected of the same tone or retellings of things that I enjoy already. It's a golden age of television, and I'm sitting by the sideline, just my fingers in my ears, trying to ignore it.
Yeah,
it's not good, Joel.
I don't have time. I don't have time. Yeah, no, I hear you. So, I mean, one of the things that you mentioned was being away last weekend at the miniature show. So, I mean, I have a grasp on it because I've taken a look at some of the pictures on your website, which is JF DeBow, for anybody that is interested. It's jfdebow.com. But
it's the worst website.
No, it's a very attractive website, as a matter of fact. But so I'm familiar only kind of through pop culture about, you know, like, there's Dungeons and Dragons, which is like the tabletop RPG and the various versions of that. And then there's tabletop games like Catan and Munchkin and stuff like that. But then these larger war games fall into a category kind of all on their own. So what you're talking about when you say miniatures, these are like little battle miniatures that are then part of a larger event, larger game.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, have you seen the Steve Carell movie, The 40-Year-Old Virgin?
I have, but it was a really long time ago.
Yeah, there's a scene where he's painting a toy soldier.
Right.
That is exactly what I do as a hobby, ladies. So no, it's a fairly amazing hobby when you deconstruct it a bit. It's definitely born of the nerdy D&D type thing where you have a little toy soldier that you paint. But at the same time, it's evolved in kind of its own entity where people will collect very, very large armies. It's a very strategically, most of them are strategically demanding games. So there's some of that. But the painting aspect, I played a few tournaments and no one wants me on their teams because I am not good at the game itself. But I do have a lot of fun with the storytelling that goes around the games, and mostly with the modeling. And it's just to me, it's kind of a meditative thing to be able to just build a model and paint it, choose colors, give the model some history, and really kind of just sit down and spend hours in quiet or listening to music, just painting it.
Yeah.
And I'm good at painting large amounts of these models and making like really elaborate displays and things like that. My team won the best theme and appearance for our the tournament we are we're in over the weekend, which is super cool. But at the same time, I'm not comparable. There's the same event that I was at, there's a contest called the Crystal Brush, which has a grand prize of $10,000.
Wow.
And the I can give you the link so that people can go to the Crystal Brush website and see what these people do with their painting. And it's stuff that's absolutely out of this world. Like, they don't just paint the miniatures, they'll sculpt them themselves and then paint them to very like absolutely incredible levels. There's a lot of I don't want to say celebrities, there's a lot of celebrity nerds, I should say, that will pay some of these artists to paint things for them. I know J.R. Martin has a sizable collection of professionally painted models.
Wow.
Local friend Mathieu Fontaine, who's a professional, this is what he does for a living. He paints toy soldiers for a living.
Wow.
Again, ladies.
Wow. I'm on their website right now. This stuff is amazing.
It's absolutely breathtaking. And Mathieu's painted, I think, two things for J.R. Martin so far.
Wow. That's really cool. I'm trying to post the link in the chat room just because everybody has to see this.
there's chat room.
Yeah, just crystalbrush.com. Just hold on here. I can just throw that in here. There we go. I think that's it. Yeah, this stuff is incredible. So go back to when you said that you were making models. So you don't sculpt them, but do you assemble them?
There's different levels of things. Like, I don't scratch build many things because that's time consuming. I'm not much of a sculptor. I do a bit of it. What I tend to do, I hate to do models as they are out of the box. Like, when you come out of the box, they're on something called sprues, which basically just all the pieces on a plastic frame. Mm-hmm. And cut those up and put those together following instructions, and you get a model. I do that very infrequently because I like to personalize the models, what we call conversions.
Okay.
Just to give them more personality, give them a more unique look. So that's definitely something I do, but I don't scratch build. I'm kind of like in the middle, personalizing things that already exist.
Right. So it's like buying a Lego kit and modding it and changing it so that
exactly
a certain way. Yeah.
You're basically buying the Lego kit and you're changing something from the original instructions, but you're not necessarily just taking a bunch of bricks and coming up with something new from scratch.
Yeah, your own version of it. So I mean, I'm seeing there's the themes that I'm kind of catching on. There's a sci-fi theme. I'm seeing a lot of fantasy stuff on your website previously, but also on this Crystal Brush site. But like, so what is there? Is it one game or is it many, many different types of games?
Oh my God, no, it's many, many games. The I think the hobby evolved from historical wargaming, people that would basically replicate historical battles.
Okay.
From say Napoleonic Wars, and using what were at some point probably lead figurines that poisons the players and painters.
yeah.
Back then everything was toxic.
Yeah.
The most popular game is Warhammer 40,000, which spreads into book and other game franchises.
Yeah, I mean, that's got a video game version too.
Exactly. Like you said, several video games actually.
Yeah, so that that was my next thing. Like I'm familiar with that, and the, like orcs, humans, and even that's more like techie. Like the orcs have like chainsaws and there's a lot more machines in that.
Yeah. The Games Workshop, the company that makes that, has basically two large IPs. They have the Warhammer 40,000, which is set in the 40,000th millennia. So it's in the future a little.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grim dark a lot. And very the slogan is that in the 40th millennium there is only war. So it's not an inviting place. But that's probably the single most popular game in that genre. But they also publish something called Age of Sigmar, which is more of a fantasy battle setting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's other larger companies. There's another company called Privateer Press that does a sort of steampunky type game.
I've seen some steampunk miniatures. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some cool ones. I'm not a big fan of the models from Privateer Press, but a lot of people like them, so to each their own. There's a company called Weird with a Y that does a miniature game in the Weird West thing. Something it's called Malifaux, but if you know about the there's a Deadland role playing game, it feels very similar to that. So it's kind of Call of Cthulhu in the Old West, and they have some gorgeous miniatures.
Well, I'm looking at the Games Workshop, the second title that you mentioned. What was it called? Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, Age of Sigmar.
Some of these quote unquote hero figurines, they don't look tiny at all.
No, there's been something that some people have called scale creep, where models are getting bigger and bigger as the companies have the means to make them bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I'm trying to find some specs, but I'm not seeing any physical dimensions in the description right now.
This is how bad of a nerd I am, because I do these conversion where I kind of kit bash different kits together. I tend to know a lot of them, so normally if you name one, I can probably give you a general idea of how big it is.
Okay, I am looking at the Auric Runefather on Magmadorth. Wow, that is a mouthful. There's one spec. It is a 32mm base.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty tiny fig. That guy's probably roughly 2.5 inches tall by maybe like an inch and a half
So the photography is just playing
ground space.
What are some of these other ones? So this guy looks like he might be a big one. No, this is just a whole team of them. It's like, yeah, some of them, I can see that they look like there's some miniatures that are like 2 inches tall, inch and a half. But then there's other ones that, I mean, comparatively, they are going to be 8 inches. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, definitely. I have a model for 40K called a Night Titan that's roughly 9 inches tall.
Wow,
it's huge beast. These things take forever to put together.
The level of detail is astounding. I'm assuming with 3D printing and die casting and all the technology that's out there these days, they can probably do some just magical stuff.
Well, right now, a lot of companies use 3D modeling engines. Like they'll sculpt in a 3D 3D software, or they'll sculpt them manually, scan them in 3D, add details in the software, and then cut them for casting in the software and have them prototyped. 3D printing, unfortunately, doesn't offer the kind of resolution that we as Wargamer want yet, but it's going to get there.
Yeah,
slowly, and that's going to be an interesting revolution.
The two ends are slowly kind of meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it would be interesting to see if there's any 3D printers that are trying to go this route. Maybe if the game design, like if it wasn't so complex and so intricate, like if the actual figurines were supposed to be more simplified, whether there could be like a 3D printed like a tabletop game like this where you're, you know, cartoony tanks and your, you know, flower pots and like just I could see it being a little bit more kid friendly.
There's a company called Ninja Division who does chibi style models.
Nice.
I can't show you. I need to turn on my camera. Like your listeners won't see this, but here, this is actually something I was assembling before the show. I don't know if my camera's focusing on it properly, but this is one of these things. It's not for, I don't think there's a game for it. Even if there is, I don't care. I'm mostly just doing this for the pleasure of painting that fig.
Right.
What I showed Joel is essentially a very chibi, a super deformed type steampunk character that I've assembled. There's definitely the problem with the resolution is that when in 3D printing is that you wind up with kind of a textured surface. You don't get very smooth surfaces and you don't get many details. So for people who just want playing pieces, whether it's 3D printing or just buying mass produced cheaper pieces, kind of boils down to the same thing, except the 3D printing is going to be more expensive.
Right.
And anybody that wants to participate in the hobby because they're interested in the painting and the modeling, 3D printing unfortunately requires too much cleaning up and you lose too much detail. So it's kind of the hobby is sort of in this nether zone where 3D printing can't quite do what needs to be done for it, either price-wise or quality-wise. But again, this is very temporary, especially now that liquid resin 3D printers are getting more popular.
Right.
Those will probably be part of the solution for that.
Yeah. Even if it's something that maybe isn't used on the consumer level, but you were talking earlier about how they were like sculpting and printing prototypes and stuff like that. I would imagine it would probably be a good tool for the people that are making these official.
Oh, absolutely. But these guys are using high-end prototyping machine, not consumer end.
Well, I suppose,
3D
yeah.
printers.
Yeah.
So their 3D printers that are probably worth $40,000 can definitely do the kind of a resolution needed to
right.
have to have that kind of thing. But what they do is they'll print a master, or they'll print a master sprue, or they'll just machine an injection mold. And they some of the larger companies will use these complex three-part injection molds for plastics that just
wow.
have an amazing amount of detail. But that's so far out of reach of the end user.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm curious now, what are these made of? So you're painting them. You get them and they're not even assembled. You have to put them together and you got to paint them. But what are you dealing with? Plastic, resin?
The company, most companies are starting to use plastic more and more. Games Workshop is almost exclusively plastic models because they're huge, so they have a lot of they own their own manufacturers, so they have a lot of control over what they do. Some of the smaller companies are also starting to do plastic by having them manufactured in China and other countries. And just importing them. Meanwhile, Games Workshop has expensive models, but they also have their manufacturers in Nottingham, England, and I think they have one in Memphis in the U.S. So you pay a bit more, but it's quote-unquote locally made, I guess, mm-hmm. which is weird that the big company is the one that's keeping things local. But we're seeing more and more plastic, which is great because of all the materials to use to make models, plastic is by far the easiest to assemble and modify. After that, there's a lot of companies like more smaller runs will be done sometimes in resin. High quality resin, however, kind of costs a lot of money, so those make for expensive models. They're also kind of risky when they're cast because sometimes you'll get bubbles and imperfections, so you
right.
have to accept that as a possibility. One of the solutions to the price that some companies have started using is a sort of something called resinated plastic, which is a hybrid plastic resin, and that's garbage. It's absolutely the worst freaking thing that you can use for a model because it chips, it's hard to keep smooth surfaces on it,
it doesn't file
correctly. And
so
then there's the classic metal models that you see less and less, but are still prevalent for very small companies.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think I've held some small metal ones at like craft fairs and different like events and stuff where there's been some of the stuff on display. I'm gonna have to take a closer look at some of the nerdier conventions around the city when I go to them. Usually I'm at a table selling my wares, but I like to take breaks and walk around. And I'm gonna start searching some of the stuff out and just take a lot closer look at them. I mean, I've passed by tables and I kind of get what it is, but I've never actually kind of like got in there and taking a closer look. So you've been doing this, you said, for like 15 years, give or take?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact. I'm probably closer to 20 years.
Wow, that's incredible. So I mean, does this bring any income for you, or is it just a hobby? Like, do people pay you for your painted figures? I mean, I'm asking because they're beautiful.
I have been paid for miniatures, but the thing is, I'm not good enough to sell to the high bidders. Like, someone who really wants to pop down a good amount of money will hire someone that's much better than I am.
Right.
So I can't produce the level of quality at the level of speed necessary for this to be a source of income. In fact, this game costs me. It's a huge money sink.
As is any hobby worthwhile, is something I'm discovering.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't regret it because I have a lot of fun for it. Just going to Adepticon, the event I went over over last week, I call that second Christmas because it is the single only con where I feel comfortable going, and I'm generally happy pretty much the entire time I'm there.
Wow.
It's the only public event I can go to and feel no social anxiety whatsoever.
Jeez.
Just because I'm amongst my peers.
Yeah.
So it's There's a sense of community that comes with it. There's a sense of kind of belonging. It's a nice, relaxing hobby. And although it does cost me a lot of money in a year just to, you know, buy the paints and buy the models and all that, on a per hour of enjoyment basis, it's probably pennies.
Wow. Well, it's like Lego's the same way. I mean, you look at these people on YouTube that do, like, they've got their Lego city set up, and it's like, wow, that's really cool. It's like, yeah, I would like to do that. I could do that. I could take the time, you know, on a weekend to try to put together some Lego city stuff. And it's not the time that I don't have, which usually is my bottleneck, because I would dedicate the time to make a little Lego city. It's when you look at a 32 by 32 stud building and realize it's a $400 set. And then you realize that these people in their cities have got 12 of these, you know, plus custom things, plus a train, three trains, you know, and you're just like, what job do you have that you've got, you know, $400 a week or a month of disposable income that you can spend on Lego?
People like me who are just extremely lonely and have nothing else to do with their lives.
Well, I don't know. Like this stuff is just, it's so, so expensive. And I'm finding that with any of the really cool adult, you know, hobbies, there's always seems to be a cost attached to it. One of the things I'm really enjoying about Minecraft is, like, granted, some the time I spend in it, you know, obviously I don't spend any business day time in there, but like I'm sacrificing a little bit of sleep to get in there and enjoy the game. But it was only $35, and like for me, you know, being able to be creative and stuff in Minecraft and kind of scratch that itch of, you know, like what you say, you know, painting a model, or for me, building Lego and stuff like that. I don't have $100 a month to spend on Lego. I wish I did. And already I'm thinking in my head, like, well, if I started streaming Lego and maybe got a little bit of donations, then I could just kind of put that towards, you know, my Lego budget or something. Or I could also just, you know, sell some more prints and just like, all right, all my print income, instead of going towards other things, could go towards, you know, go towards Lego purchases and stuff. But yeah, it's crazy how, like, once you get passionate about something, like, you really start to realize as you spend more and more time and more money, you almost have to ignore it. Like, you also have to think, like, no, I didn't just spend $150 on Lego. That didn't happen. I'm going to enjoy myself this weekend, you know, or two weekends, you know, kind of make it last, you know. But even, like, and I had... And that price tag on the Lego was $120 for two sets, and that was secondhand.
Ouch.
Yeah, like it just, I mean, it's worth it. It was absolutely worth it. Like, I mean, when I go to the movies and it cost me $12 to $14, and it's a 2-hour experience and it was fun, but that's it. You know, when I spend, you know, three or four times that, like say $50 on a Lego AT-ST, and that's a 4.5-hour build. You know, so then that's cheaper than going to the movies. Plus, I have a cool thing on my shelf afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. No. That's the thing. Like, as much as the thing is, I try to have a budget for entertainment rather than a budget for say the game or movies or this or that.
Mm-hmm.
And that budget, usually I get more mileage out of my entertainment budget if I'm doing miniatures than if I go to movies or, God forbid, go to bars, just because for the amount of hours I can fill reading a book and making models, which are my main activities, it's really cheap entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, like when you think about, when you compare it to it that way, you know, it's just, Phil Rude in the Slack chat earlier this week had said something like, "Hey Joel, you know what? You're out there creating something. You're not just kind of mindlessly watching, you know, endless episodes of Friends on Netflix. You know, like, instead of doing that, you're in Minecraft and you're building a tower, or you're building, you know, Snake Mountain, or you're doing something like that." And he just is like, "You know, I think you're okay. Like, you're not wasting time so much, you know." And I think, I mean, if it was a video game where I was running around and shooting people for no reason and just kind of like getting nothing out of it. Didn't have a community, like, I'm not to say, like, not slamming Overwatch, because that's got like a community and story and stuff like that, but like I'm thinking more like arena Medal of Honor stuff, like just like really fast, you know, aggressive, you know, violent stuff. It's like that to me would be kind of, for me, wasting my time, whereas with Minecraft I'm definitely still scratching that itch of creativity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, it's something that I've been I've been really into.
Do I see it if like you want to be really high level and pseudo like $5 pop philosophy about it, is it doesn't really matter. Like I say, there's not many things that we can say we're alive for, but enjoyment and creating memories that we are fond of is definitely and kind of undeniably one of the reasons we're alive. Like whether you're into religion or not, leading a happy life is part of it. And whether you get your happiness from going jogging or from playing a shooter game or from writing a book, as long as you're doing things that make you happy, you're not wasting your time. If you're doing something that makes you miserable because of some goal that you'll never reach, I know some people like that want to write a book but don't enjoy writing a book. Those are the people that I feel are wasting their time. Even if the reflex would be to encourage them, it's no, writing a book's a noble endeavor. But if you hate every minute of it, it's not a noble endeavor. You'll never finish and you're wasting your time. So even the 12-year-old kid that all he does is play video games, like even dumb video games, as long as he's not like damaging his health, as long as it makes him happy, like I don't criticize.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's I think part of it is just the entrepreneurial guilt of finally having some downtime, like finally being able to like, it's 9 o'clock. I don't have to go back to work now that I've done dinner. Like I can actually go do whatever I want until I'm tired enough to go to bed. And it's an odd thing to be able to do after, you know, 10 years of just like nose to the grindstone, late nights all the time, you know, working weekends, stuff like that. It's a nice shift. It's a healthy shift, but it's an odd shift to mentally kind of wrap my head around. It's a great kind of off the rails episode of the Citadel Cafe, because normally we talk a lot about what we're watching and stuff like that, as opposed to like what we're spending, you know, creating or taking part in, which I think is really cool. This is the part where we're going to dive into the Internet Minute, and this is brought to you by Patreon, or actually you. So if you like the show, if you're listening to us and you're like, hey, I like these guys, I should help them make more stuff. One of the ways you can do that is go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe and become a patron. The way that it works is that you sign up to donate a little bit of money for every episode. It can be very small. It's up to you. A lot of people do $1 a month, which ends up being 25 cents a show. So much less than a cup of coffee, even over the course of an entire month, you can help keep the lights on here at the Citadel Cafe. Goes towards server fees, when I have to hire Ryan Murphy, my friend and very savvy web developer, to fix things that I break. I try not to break them. I'm sorry, Ryan. So stuff like that is a great way to support the show. You can go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. If you decide to become a patron, then you get to join the Slack chat, which is a patron-only community. And it is super fun. I always have a good time in there throughout the week. So check us out over at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. My pick this week is, ironically, a Lego pick. I did not plan to talk about Lego tonight earlier in the show, but I do have a pick this week, and it's not a Lego set. It is a... sad when I was reviewing this before the show, I realized it's not an actual custom build. It's a custom render. It was designed in 3D and presented it that way. I thought it might have been something that someone actually built. The photography and the rendering on it is just really, really good. But what it is called the AFOL Brick House. And for those of you that don't know, AFOL is an adult fan of Lego. And it is a modular home meant to go into a Lego city. It's meant to fit on a 16x32 plate. But what I find so amusing about this is that it looks like a 2x4 Lego brick turned up on its side, as if you lived in like a tower. And so that looks like a brick. And then when you open it up, inside, it's all Lego nerd. There is a Lego brick room. There is, with all the different drawers and all the different color bricks. There's a design desk. There's a kind of a glass display room. And then there's a little mini Lego city up on the top floor where they've put together a microscale Lego town that goes inside this Lego building that would go in your Lego town. Like, just the idea behind it and the joke behind it, I find very, very amusing. So if you're interested at all in checking out some original LEGO ideas, I'll have the link in the show notes. If LEGO Ideas is a really cool site, actually. It's a place where people can submit their original LEGO designs. And if you get up to 10,000 support likes on the site, then LEGO will review it for a potential official LEGO set. If you've watched the LEGO Brickumentary, which I think came out in 2015, there's a couple of people interviewed on that documentary that actually had their designs selected. One of them, I believe, was a guy that designed the Mars rover in LEGO. And I thought that was really, really cool. So are you a LEGO fan? Like, you've decided to avoid that black hole.
I'm an admirer from afar. I actually am signed up. I receive I think there's a newsletter for LEGO Ideas. I keep getting their emails and look at some of the coolest ideas. I love the idea of LEGOs. I would absolutely adore, like, you recently did a build of the Lambda shuttle, the shuttle Tidarium from Star Wars.
Yes.
This is a set I've been pondering picking up and putting back down at the local Toys R Us for a long time, but you're hitting on the head that this is the crack pipe I can't afford to smoke, because I will get addicted. And the same thing for Minecraft. You mentioned Minecraft, and Minecraft is definitely one of those things that I would learn how to play, pick a ridiculously complex and time-consuming project, and then just go at it forever.
Yeah.
And I'd lose all the time that I need to put into other projects. Yeah.
Snake Mountain, That was, I don't want to say mistake. It's going to look really cool when it's done, but man, it's a lot bigger. Right now, it's just the snake head. I haven't even thought about what the building is going to be.
Inside and out.
Yeah. When you decided to be like, all right, so this is how big the fangs are. And then when you scale it out and you draw it in Photoshop, like, this is freaking easy, like, blah, whatever. It's, you know, it's 80 blocks tall and this, that, and the other thing. And then you get into the game, and you're like, oh, okay. So I can't fly. I'm not building this in creative. I'm building it in survival mode. So, like, most of my build time has actually been building the scaffolding that I have to stand on so I don't die when I'm building the damn thing. And I have died several times. Thankfully, there's a lake underneath me, so if I fall, most of the time I go bloop. Every once in a while, I go splat, depending on how close to the edge of the lake I am.
So you're doing this hardcore. This isn't like one of those videos where people build entire cities in creative mode and put some music over that.
Yeah,
and you're done.
There's no block fire hose coming for me. Like, I'll get really into the build. It's like, yeah, I really got my head around where I'm going with the way that the snakes, you know, head is attached to its body, and I am out of bricks again. I have to go mining. And, like, you know, it's easy. I'm making it out of smooth stone, which is bloody everywhere. So that decision was at least sound. Unfortunately, it just, you know, you can only mine so much before your brain says, like, all right, this was fun for my scratching my a little OCD itch, but I'm done with the whole, like, strip mining. I need to kind of go up topside and do something fun.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's really
as if you had to sculpt all your Lego bricks before you made your starship or
And here, the itch that it's scratching is that with Lego and with, like, this AFOL brick house, the idea to do something original like that is fantastic if you have a house full of Lego bricks. I've got several sets, but I'm not taking them apart to build something custom. Like, I want to find other stuff, you know. I have some Lego that I had as a kid around here somewhere, so I'm looking to try and find that so I can have at least some bricks to play around with and come up with some new ideas and just have some fun. But with these custom designs that you see people that actually build it out of Lego, they already live in a house with like 10,000 Lego pieces, you know, more, probably much more than that. At least with Minecraft, yes, I have to go get the bricks, but I have access to them. Like, I've got access to all the different stuff.
Right.
You know, or as I get better at the game, I have access to it. Like, I mean, you know, there's other kind of things in the game that I'm sort of learning to enjoy as well. But I'm RPing a little bit. Like, it's the World of Warcraft mentality in me will not go away. So there's for example, my avatar in Minecraft is a Skeletor skin because I'm building Snake Mountain, of course. You know, like,
just that makes sense.
Yeah, just little things that
the proper.
Yeah, it took 10 minutes, like whatever, but it's fun, you know. It just, and what goes right back to what you said about enjoying it, you know, about having fun, you know, and that sort of thing. But I would really like to have more Lego to try more custom builds, even if it's following someone else's custom build. Like even if my colors don't match. I've seen a lot of really cool Technic machines and little clocks and cool stuff that I've seen on YouTube that do not look like they require an awful lot of bricks, but they would require some very specific ones. And if I can get my hands on a Technic set, you know, on the cheap, I don't care about whether it builds a bulldozer or a race car or a tractor or whatever like that. Like I would probably just try to build like a great ball machine or something fun out of it. But anyway, so this the Lego Ideas AFOL Brickhouse was created by user Vito Solo Lego on Lego Ideas. I highly encourage everybody to go check it out. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. You can find me by name on just about every social media you can imagine. I barbecued a spy chicken for dinner, so if you'd like to see what I'm cooking, you can go to Instagram. I do occasionally post art. Again, refer to the earlier statement that I do not draw for myself a whole lot right now. But I do post a lot of art, especially when I'm at conventions. I'll do a lot of my commissions and stuff with Instagram. That seems to be my home right now. But really, it's just Joel Duggan, wherever you want to hang your social media hat. And if you are interested in books and you're interested in art books, check out ForgePublishing.com. That's my publishing imprint. We do creator-owned art books. And the first one, the launch project, which has been in the works since our September when our successful Kickstarter ended, is at the printer. I talked to them today, and they are mailing me the proofs to approve before we actually push the big red print all the things button. So if you are a supporter of that project, thank you. For your patience, and thank you for...
You're welcome.
Yes. Hey, you are. That's right. but hey, it's an exciting time. It's really nice. This week I'm going to be writing an update for the Kickstarter. So hey, you get the sneak peek that we're officially printing and everything is good and the design is done. Even all the prints for the fulfillment, like the backer rewards, they're finished. Like it's just, we're getting some proofs and checking to make sure that everything looks good before we send it to backers. But I've got really high confidence in both the printer and Dave Michael, the guy that I'm using for fulfillment, because they're experienced, they have good resources, and I'm really excited to kind of push go on this first project and get it out to everybody. But that's enough about me. We've talked quite a bit of the show about you, JF. So where can people go to find you? How can people buy your new book in June? Like, give everybody the details that they need.
Okay, so the best place to find me is at jfdubeau.com. That's jfdubeau.com, which is my website that needs updating. I apologize. That's where you'll find my page for miniatures, my page for my books, and the links for that. You can also find my books are on Amazon, so you can pre-order there for A God in the Shed. You just need to search for it. It's the only book with that name, so that makes it easy.
Yeah, that should be great. Yeah.
Can I ask to send your listeners on a mission if they so choose to accept it?
Absolutely. Give them a quest.
All right, I have a quest. There is no rewards. I'm sorry. I'm not rich.
The warm fuzzy feeling in the cockle of their hearts will be the reward.
Oh, absolutely. If you want to feel like you're part of manipulating a system.
You're really selling this, man.
I know. I work in marketing. right now the Dragon Awards from DragonCon are taking nominations for projects for books and TV movies and video games, and my book is eligible for nomination in the horror novel award category. So I've got a bit.ly link that people can go to and just click there. And if they want to nominate my book or another book, I'm just putting it out there, or nominate other things, you can nominate in all the categories. You just go to bit.ly/dragonshed2017 and nominate things. I mean, I'd like you to nominate my book, but nominate whatever you feel like. Nominate Pilot X from Tom Merritt. Because he's not in my category.
Nice.
Nominate a bunch of things. But if you do care to nominate A God in the Shed by Jeff Dubeau, I will love you forever, and you can come and see me at conventions and say you've done it, and I'll hug you.
There you go. So there's the reward.
Experience for
like,
me.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, you have to, you receive the quest, you have to go on the quest, and then you have to take the quest results back to the person that gave you the quest, and then they give you the reward, in this case, the hug.
Wouldn't that be the worst World of Warcraft
reward? You toil over the Tomb of Sargeras, and the dude back at the farm says, thanks, and then hugs you, and that's the end of it. Yeah.
Not just any dude, just an undead.
Yeah, this the, or the 70s mustache human, you know, like the creepy old guy with the big gray mustache. This is like, they're there.
Yeah, that's the guy you get when you're Alliance, or you get a two-headed ogre when you're a Horde.
Yep. So for me, that was my, I think he had a full beard. I don't think I had just had a mustache, but my human warlock was the very first character that I played, like, seriously in World of Warcraft. And he was the mustache, the 70s mustache beard warlock. It was very, very funny. I did not feel at all aggressive and powerful. I felt very weird running around in that getup. But anyway, that's it, folks. You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.